3CR, your station, your voice.
Coming up is a podcast brought to you by the dedicated and diverse volunteers at 3CR. Just a quick message before you get there. For the month of June, we're asking listeners to donate to the station to help keep us going. We rely on the generous donations of the community to survive. Go to 3cr.org.au/donate and show your support for community-owned and community-run media. Thanks for your support and happy listening.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays our respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m. Only double. Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're tuned into Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. This is Priya, and I'm in the studio with Leela and Zakia. Good morning.
Good morning, Priya.
Good morning,
Zakia.
Good morning, Leela. Good morning, Priya.
It's so cute that we do our little rounds of like everybody says good morning to everybody else. How are you both doing today?
I feel like Radiothon is always a bit invigorating, you know? It gets me pumped for the new year to hear how much people appreciate the work we do. Just us talking to each other, so it's really nice to hear from everyone.
Yeah, it's a bit terrifying as well, just being reminded that I'm not just hanging out in the studio and saying my little things. It's like there's so many people that support the station, which is incredible. It's been wonderful to see the donations rolling in. And I should remind folks, you know, before the end of financial year, get your donations in. Radiothon is going for the whole of June, even though we don't have Radiothon specials for the whole of June. So you can donate to the station by heading to 3cr.org.au/donate. You can call the station on 03-9419-8377. You can text us on 0488-809-855, or you can just drop by the station at 21 Smith Street, basically during business hours anytime. We'd love to see you. And I believe there's still some incredible limited edition Radiothon merch.
Oh, yes. So please come in to 3CR in person if you like and check it out.
Yeah, I've been trying to push for another round of the Radiothon merch to be released, but I believe this is a one-time only special, so get in while you can. Yes, scarcity mindset and enforced scarcity. All right, so we have a big show on as per usual. Leela, do you want to kick off our rundown?
Yeah, so first up, we'll be hearing an interview with Dr. Alison Bronowski, who is a former diplomat and academic who's written 14 books about Australia's role and relationships in the world. From 2020 to 2022, Dr. Alison was a panel member for the People's Inquiry by the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network, also known as IPAN. IPAN is a grassroots network of organisations across Australia that works to create public discussion and push for independent foreign policies, free from foreign military bases, government nationalism, corporate influence, or any interests that reduce so-called Australia's sovereignty. And today, Dr. Bronowski joins us to talk about IPAN's urgent call for the Australian government to stay out of military action and respect international law following the recent illegal bombings in Iran by the United States.
Yeah, very important. And also, we will be having another conversation later today unpacking the question of Australian sovereignty in general, which I think would be a good complement to this, just thinking about genocide and dispossession and our complicities here and elsewhere. After that, we are going to be joined by Kristen O'Connell from Anti-Poverty Center, who's speaking with us about last week's People Against Poverty Summit, which ran in Maganjin, Brisbane, and it brought together people, movements, and communities to learn skills, share ideas, build relationships, form networks of solidarity, and imagine an alternative to the poverty crisis in so-called Australia. Now, disclosure here, and I will mention it again, but I am a member of the Anti-Poverty Center Committee, which is my honor and privilege. But yeah, it is just incredible work that is being done by a whole range of different anti-poverty organizations around the country. And it is really cool to see a summit that brings together folks that are living below the poverty line. It was amazing to see them pull it off and bring people together from around the country.
Then we have Ruby, Drop, and Ned. As part of our special 3CR coverage of Early Dead Out of Victoria's week-long EOFY campaign to cut all economic ties to genocide. Dajun Benjelins, Ruby, Trop, and Ned Kalija from Albert Out of Victoria's join us to speak about the importance of organizing to bring about an end to genocide on these stolen lands and end a Palestine. They discuss Albert Out of Victoria's upcoming rally to demand the so-called Australia's Future Fund's divest from weapons campaigns complicit in genocide, including Albert systems. The rally now to a future soaked in blood begins at 5 p.m. today, Thursday 26th of June, at the Future Fund head office on 447 Collins Street in the CBD.
And finally, we are going to be joined by Jinghua Chen, Senior Media Advisor at Economic Media Center and member of MEAA for Palestine, who's speaking with us about Antoinette Latouf's victory yesterday in her wrongful termination case against the ABC. And as listeners will be aware of, the public broadcaster fired Latouf on the 20th of December 2023 after receiving complaints that she had shared facts about Israel's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza on social media. So this is a massive judgment, and I can imagine it will have significant implications for the broader media landscape in so-called Australia, and also for a range of wrongful terminations that have occurred since the commencement of the genocide and people have started speaking up. So really, yeah. Really excited to bring this all to you today.
Looking forward to unpacking that. It will influence our whole media landscape, as you said. So, yeah, really looking forward to getting into the details.
And we will be back to you shortly with our news headlines for today.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalization intersects where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your street privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo! These are the news headlines from Thursday, the 26th of June. Australia's support for Israel and US military operation is under growing scrutiny as the Independent and Peaceful Australian Network, or IPAN, has called on the federal government to declare no participation in the recent illegal bombing of Iran by both states. In a media release circulated this Monday, the 23rd of June, IPAN condemned Israel and the United States' action, as well as the Australian government's endorsement of these illegal actions. The Grassroots Peace Network of demanding a full review of Australia's military alliance and infrastructure. The fragile ceasefire brokered between Israel and Iran appears to be holding despite Israel's near immediate violation of agreements. Meanwhile, Israel's genocidal campaigns in Gaza continues, with media sources reporting the killing of future 78 people at 8 distribution centers yesterday.
Also in headlines, refugee support groups are calling out harsh new visa enforcement laws, which they say are putting thousands of people at risk of detention and deportation. Advocates argue the government's new measures fail to provide pathways to permanency and ignore the mental health impacts on long-term residents.
In other news, Palestinian journalists continue to face targeting, violence and abduction by Israeli forces in Gaza as international media watchdogs condemn Israel's targeting of press workers. The United Nations has called for an independent investigation, while many Australian media outlets remain silent on the rising death toll among media professionals in Gaza.
In Victoria this week, the Yuruk Justice Commission has delivered its final reports, bringing the four-year work of the commission to an end. The reports were delivered on Wednesday to Margaret Gardner AC, Governor of Victoria, and Nara Murray and Ruben Berg, the co-chairs of the First People's Assembly of Victoria. Documents include the report Yuruk for Transformation, which contains 100 recommendations based on the Commission's extensive process of receiving truth and gathering evidence about the impacts of colonisation in Victoria. The delivery of the Commission's final reports follows last week's momentous conclusion of Yuruk Commissioner Travis Lovett's 500-kilometre walk for truth. First Nations communities around the country are continuing to rally to demand stronger action on deaths in custody and stolen wages, with many people raising their voices and expressing their outrage about the death in custody of Kumanjayi White in Mbantwa Alice Springs. I also want to mention that the final report in the inquest into the death in custody of Kumanjayi Walker will be handed down on the 7th of July.
In national news, a new report released by national consumer advocacy group Choice on Wednesday this week has revealed significant differences in the cost of consumer goods between major supermarkets around Australia. This report is Choice's fifth quarterly comparison of grocery prices across Australia's largest supermarket retailers. The report, based on data collected by Choice Undercover Shoppers, details costs comparison between Woolworths, Coles, Aldi and IGA, as well as within individual retailer pricing in different locations. In March of 2025, the same set of 14 items cost $55.35 at Aldi, $58.92 at Woolworths, $59.22 at Coles and $69.74 at IGA, excluding specials. Western Australian consumers were found to be spending significantly more at Woolworths, Coles and IGA on essential items, including fresh fruit, than customers in East Coast states.
These have been the news headlines for Thursday, the 26th of June, and you're listening to 3CR 855 AM.
Do you have a fine you're worried about? If you are struggling to pay a fine, there can be ways to help you deal with it. You may be able to get your fine lifted or reduced where you are experiencing difficult life circumstances, such as family violence, mental health challenges, disability, homelessness, or drug or alcohol dependency. If you have fines from not paying toll roads, you may also be able to get the fine waived if you're experiencing financial or other hardship. Speak to a community lawyer or financial counsellor to get advice on your options. You can find your local community centre on the Federation of Community Legal Centres website, fclc.org.au. You can find a financial counsellor by calling the National Debt Helpline on 1800 007 007. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And it is the 26th of June. It is 7:15 in the morning. And I wanted to mention something that is quite important to me because of the work that I do, but also I think should be important and central to people around so-called Victoria. And that is the issue of public housing and what's been going on with the planned redevelopment of Melbourne's 44 remaining high-rise public housing towers. Now, the Legal and Social Issues Committee of the Victorian Parliament has been conducting an inquiry into that planned redevelopment, and myself, along with other colleagues at RMIT University, put in a pretty comprehensive submission. There are other folks who have been putting in submissions that relate to both the feasibility and the cost to government of delivering such a plan, but also, crucially, a lot of residents have made submissions about the impact that the government's announcement on the 20th of September 2023 had on them, where so many people were blindsided by the state's decision to demolish and redevelop all of these towers. You know, they are home to over 10,000 people, and public tenants have been suffering under ongoing disinvestment by the state, where their homes have been allowed to run down by the public landlord, and they're now being told that they'll be demolished and redeveloped to make way for non-government run housing and a mix of that type of housing with private residences as well. And there are really big questions about the implications that this will have for current residents who look like they're going to be dispersed all around the city. So the first set of hearings for the inquiry was held on Tuesday this week at Gering Hub in Flemington, where basically the members of the Legal and Social Issues Committee got to hear from a range of community sector services, but also from a lot of residents themselves. And there's been a bit of coverage of this in mainstream media, but I think I really just wanted to draw folks' attention to the fact that people have been talking about how their basic rights, their basic dignity, and their, you know, their home has been violated by this decision. So hopefully people keep eyes on that. I believe the hearings commence again on Monday.
Yes, and they've already got over 800 written submissions. So just from that, you can see the number of people impacted by this. It's good to keep an eye on it because it will, have a major impact on our communities with an expanding effect.
Yeah, and as we've seen, media reporting over the past week has shown a couple of concerning trends in the way that Homes Victoria has approached the relocations policy, where we're seeing that government is starting to engage in spot purchasing of apartments, which obviously is going to have a massive cost if they're buying different apartments, after saying that the reason they wanted to redevelop the Flemington and North Melbourne estates first is because they had available community housing that had just been built nearby. But as we're hearing from residents in these hearings and in these submissions, the community housing that's been built is simply not of the appropriate size to accommodate residents. They don't want to go to properties that are not suitable for their family composition or size.
Or, ability. Moving affects people in so many ways, especially if, you are in the public housing system, you're already have reduced autonomy over where you live. So if people aren't getting their accessibility aids as well and the sizing is inappropriate, it's going to have really big impacts.
Yeah, and I think something on the accessibility point as well is that many people who are elderly or disabled that are living in the public housing towers have had accessibility modifications made in those homes, and there's no guarantee that those will be made in the community housing properties that they're going into. That's definitely been a question that people have asked.
Yeah, there's just so many unknowns, and it's not justified that people that don't have the luxury of owning their own private property should have to face this kind of insecurity and potential life quality reduction to get their basic needs met.
And I mean, the government's plans for the North Melbourne and Flemington estates, at least for the buildings 33 Alfred Street in North Melbourne, 120 Racecourse Road in Flemington, and 12 Holland Court in Flemington, is that they will have all of the residents out of those buildings by September this year. So it is pretty, it's pretty concerning and a live issue to sort of see how this is going to play out, because we're getting to that September deadline, and yet people have been concerned about the quality of the offers that they're receiving for relocation, and really concerned about the locations that they're being asked to accept, as far out as Craigieburn, when they're living right in the heart of the city.
Yeah, so not to mention if accessibility aids and appropriate sized houses aren't provided, there's still the question of losing community, losing language minority community groups, people have been creating community in these spaces for years, and to have all of that uprooted and dispersed across the city into outer suburbs is really a destabilizing thing for a lot of people who come from language minorities in an English-speaking colony.
Totally. And a lot of people that have come from migrant and refugee backgrounds, especially people who've come from refugee backgrounds and have found stability in the public housing towers, have been able to build home, a sense of community, and people have lived there for decades across multiple generations. So the effects of this dispersal will be significant. And unfortunately, what we're seeing right now is that it's playing out in a really, less than ideal and piecemeal way. So yeah, really concerned for tenants, and hoping that everybody keeps their eye on it, because with issues that have a longer time span, they can fall out of the media cycle, and people can forget that this is ongoing. We saw this with famously with the refugee crisis in this country, with the men that were imprisoned in Mantra Hotel, where mainstream media sort of dropped off after months and months of these men being imprisoned in a hotel in the suburbs, even though that was an ongoing crisis for them.
Yeah, look, it doesn't provide flashy headlines that are consumable in a few seconds, but I think it's really important that we keep our sense of connection with our wider community, especially, as people living in privately owned houses or private rentals. We're all connected in different ways, so we need to be diversifying our media intake to pay attention to these ongoing issues that, are going to affect a lot of people's every day.
I'm going to do something so grotty right now and remind people again that it's Radiothon. I was just like, well, you're talking about diversifying your media intake. Where else are people going to hear these kinds of critical conversations in a sustained way, where we pay attention to issues and we keep coming back to them to remind you that they're going on, that there's developing analysis, and that we care about the analysis coming from people that are experiencing these issues, because you're part of our community. 3CR, your station, your voice. Radiothon is going until the end of June, so make sure that you get your donations in. All donations over $2 are tax deductible, and our full goal to meet during Radiothon is $275,000. So please, please chip in if you can. You can head to 3cr.org.au/donate, or you can call or text the station.
Or drop in. And that $270,000 goes to support a small number of core staff and over 70 shows for the entire year. So it is a humble amount for the work that we do out here and really keeps the basics going.
Absolutely. And we'll be back to you shortly with our first interview today. But thank you for listening. And here's another reminder about other ways you can chip in to keep the station going.
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a Container Deposit Scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
We want to hear from you. Our station is all about serving the community, and we want to know your thoughts, comments, and ideas to help shape our future. We're currently asking listeners to take part in a short online survey that will help us get to know you better and understand what you want from your local radio service. The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be in service of our valued community. To have your voice heard, head to our website and fill out the survey.
Go to 3cr.org.au/survey or call the station during business hours to organise to do the survey over the phone. Call 9419 8377.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars Prison Broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2025. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 a.m. from Monday the 7th through to Friday the 11th of July. We'll be taking you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Philip Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Middleton Prison, Marguerite Correctional Centre and Port Phillip Prison. We'll be connecting with culture and community. There'll be stories, songs, opinions and poems from the men and women inside. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR digital and streaming via our website or on the Community Radio Plus app. Head to the website 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2025 for more information.
Waxaa jaaliyada Soomaalida ee Melbourne, Victoria ama Australia oo dhan la wargelinaya in idaacadii 3CR ee afka Soomaaliga oo aad toos uga dhageysan jirteen habeen kasta oo Jumco aha 10:00 ilaa 11:00, hadda aad toos uga dhageysan kartaan 8:00 ilaa 9:00 habeen kasta oo Talaado ah. Waxaa idiin soo gudbinaynaa sidii caadada noo ahayd wararka jaaliyadda iyo kuwa dalka Australia iyo weliba wareysiyadii khubarada marka loo baahdo. Waxaad kaloo naga dhageysan kartaan bogga internetka 3cr.org.au/somali ilaa iyo isbuuc. Waqti dheer ayaan sugaynay waqtigan ka soo horreeya waqtigii hore ee u dhowaa siqda dhexe, marka waxaan rajaynaynaa inay jaaliyaddu arrinta ka faa'iidaysanayso. Mahadsanidiin iyo dhegaysi wacan.
You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. It is 7:28 in the morning. Now, Zakia, take it away. We are joined by our first guest.
Here we are. Dr. Alison Bonswoki is a former diplomat and academic who has written 14 books about Australia's role and relationship in the world. From 2020 to 2022, Dr. Alison was a panel member for the People's Inquiry by the Independent and Peaceful Australian Network, IPAN. IPAN is a grassroots network of organizations across Australia that works for create public discussion and pushed for independent foreign policies. Free from foreign military bases, government nationalism, corporate influence, or any interests that reduce Australia's sovereignty. Today, Dr. Bronze Bronski joins us to talk about IPAN's urgent call for the Australian government to stay out of military action and respect international law, following the recent legal bombing in Iran by the United States. Hello.
Good morning, Good Alison. Morning. Thank you for joining us on Thursday Breakfast. We are here with Zakia. And yeah, do you want to go ahead with the first question?
Yes. First, we have to start with, can you explain why IPN is calling on the Australian government to declare no participation in the recent US attacks on Iran?
Well, IPAN is an organisation that wants independence and peace for Australia. It has a widespread following all over in all states in Australia and has been working on these ideas for many years now with a lot of support. And every time there is a war somewhere, and unfortunately that's most of the time, IPAN make statements of the kind that you've just been reading out. And the current war against the Palestinians in Gaza has been going on now for a year and a half, as well as the war in Ukraine. But the most recent attacks against Iran are something that IPAN very strongly condemns, both the bombings of Iran and Australian support for them, which was voiced by both the opposition and the government a couple of days after it began.
Thank you. Next, much of the media coverage has focused on Iran's weapons program, but what context do you think has been left out of the conversation? What led up to this attack?
Sorry, your question again. What has been left out?
Yes.
Yeah. So
left out of the information that we have, you mean?
Out of the media coverage. So.
Oh, I see what you mean.
There's been some very specific coverage the attack on Iran, but it seems that there's context missing, and there has been some diplomatic tactics used in the lead up to the attack that aren't being addressed in a lot of mainstream media.
Well, there's an awful lot that the mainstream media don't cover about
yes.
these things, particularly when it involves the United States, because the propaganda machine swings into force straight away.
Mm.
And it is very unusual for us to hear from the other side
mm-hmm.
in a war like this. And so, just to go back to Gaza for one moment, there are no foreign journalists on the ground in Gaza. So what gets out is either from people who are trying desperately to send messages on their phones or from the journalists in Jerusalem who are themselves watched over and controlled to some extent by the government of Israel. So in that situation, we get a very limited coverage in our media. But then our own media themselves appear to self-censor, and that's been happening recently in the coverage of the war against Iran, because we see constantly reports about the terrible, tyrannical mullahs in Iran who are oppressing their people and following up the American suggestion that the best thing that could possibly happen would be regime change in Iran.
Mm,
and
yes.
that kind of argument, uncritically reported in our mainstream media, is really only, it's not even half the story. It's a distortion of the story. And the story is that Israel attacked Iran first and did all kinds of damage out of a clear sky to their nuclear facilities, unprovoked. But because Israel has had a fixed desire for at least 30 years to eliminate the government of prison, what happened was an unprovoked act of aggression supported by the United States, which then took part in it as well. And because of our alliance, it seems, much of our mainstream media was simply unwilling to call that for what it was, which was aggression.
Thank you, Dr. Ellison. And what do we know about Australian government's involvement, whether to military infrastructure, intelligence sharing, or support roles in these operations?
Well, that's something else that IPAN is very much opposed to, the involvement of Australia in a war like this, and it happens all the time because we have US bases in Australia which are used as coordinating instruments to provide intelligence to, say, Israel or the United States, which can then be used for bombing and targeting in places like Iran and certainly in Palestine as well, which means that Australia, by allowing that intelligence, technology to be used, is complicit in the war. And we are complicit in more ways than that too, because although our several ministers in the current government have denied it, Australia is actually providing weapons and weapons components to Israel, which can be used for whatever they want to use them for. And we have no control over them once they reach Israel. And that, again, makes Australia complicit. And if Israel's leaders are war criminals, which they have been accused of being by the International Criminal Court, then Australia is complicit in supporting war criminals. And that's something that IPAN complains about on a regular basis. And they are putting out a lot of statements very clearly spelling this out right now.
Thank you. Next question, from a diplomatic perspective, how are actions like these impacting Australia's independence and foreign policy? Are we making our own decision or following others?
I would say that Australia has never, almost never, had independence in its foreign policy. Not from the day of Federation, when we got all of our foreign policy given to us, ready-made by the British. And that remained the case. In fact, Australia didn't even appear to want its own foreign policy and didn't get its own foreign service until the 1940s. And the habit of mind of accepting British foreign policy as ours and then replacing that in the Second World War with American is just what has held Australian foreign policy making back. I mean, there are other countries, say, for instance, France and Russia, where the independence of their foreign policy is a very closely, a very highly valued aspect of what they do. And instead of that, Australia, as a member of Five Eyes, simply accepts mostly American intelligence, makes decisions based on that, and as we saw with the war against Iraq, that intelligence could be completely wrong, and as the Chilcot inquiry found in Britain, could be constructed in such a way as to justify the policy. Now, if Australia had more courage and, as IPAN says, independence, we wouldn't accept this. We would say, look, we don't think that's how it is. We think it's we have a different perspective on these matters, and we intend to make our foreign policy based on those perceptions. Now, I said that with a few exceptions, and there have been some exceptions in the past, when Australia has done things with other countries that were independent of our allies. For instance, when we took the initiative we did in Cambodia to get elections, to get rid of their dictatorship. They got another one later, but that's another story. When we went into the Solomons and helped them sort out conflicts between groups within the Solomons. When we went into East Timor, and by the way, the Prime Minister at the time, John Howard, was pleading with the United States to become involved, and they declined. So Australia went ahead with that, dealing with that problem by itself or with other ASEAN neighbours' support. And that kind of thing, when Australia does it, all those three were successful in their terms. And that is the kind of thing that IPAN would like to see Australia do more of. Less fighting, more independence, peaceful ways of achieving resolution of differences between countries.
Thank you. For the last question, for people listening at home who may feel disconnected or unsure what this has to do with the what this has to do with them, why should Australians care about what's happening in Iran?
Well, Australians should care about what happens to everybody. Humanity is not divided by distance or national boundaries. These are human beings. We ought to care about them, as we care, for instance, about what's happening to people in Palestine, people we don't know, but we care about it because it's an outrage. And the thought of how we like it, what was happening to us, is what should be front of mind for Australia. On the other hand, however, I understand the point of your question, and that is why, since Iran is a country quite far from us, we don't have an enormous amount of contact with Iran. I have lived there, by the way, for 2 years and enjoyed the country very much. It's a wonderful country and they're delightful people. But Australia has much more pressing concerns in our part of the world. And you wouldn't know it from the way we grumble towards the British and the United States and accept our foreign policy, as I just said, from them. What we ought to be doing, in IPAN's view and mine, is concentrating much more on the affairs of the countries in our own region, as indeed we have done at some times in the past, particularly since Whitlam and Hawke governments. And we ought to be doing more of that because this is where our prime interests lie, and this is where the most important thing Australia can do is build peaceful relations with China. And one of the ways of doing that is to make it absolutely clear to the United States that Australia is not interested in any kind, joining any kind of US war against China. And because we regard that as would not only be illegal, but it would be disastrous for everybody in the region. And we don't want to see that happen.
Dr. Allison, thank you so much for your time. I hope you have a beautiful day.
And I hope you do too, and thank you very much. It was nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Now, that was Dr. Allison Bronowski, who is a former diplomat and academic, and she's written 14 books about Australia's role and relationships in the world. And from 2020 to 2022, Allison was a panel member for the People's Inquiry by the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network, or IPAN, which is a grassroots network of organisations across the country that works to create public discussion and push for independent foreign policies free from foreign military bases, government nationalism, corporate influence, or any interests that reduce Australian sovereignty. Now, Dr. Bronowski joined us to talk about IPAN's urgent call for the Australian government to stay out of military action and respect international law following the recent illegal bombings of Iran by the United States and by Israel. You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it is 7:44 in the morning.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
Okay. And we are back on Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And we are now joined by Kristen O'Connell from Anti-Poverty Centre, who is speaking with us about last weekend's People Against Poverty Summit in Meganjin, Brisbane, which brought together people, movements and communities to learn skills, share ideas, build relationships, form networks of solidarity and imagine an alternative to the poverty crisis. Now, the summit was held across the 21st and 22nd of June, and it was collaboratively organised by Anti-Poverty Network Queensland, Anti-Poverty Network South Australia, Anti-Poverty Centre, the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, and Community Union Defence League. Now, a bit of disclosure here, I am a member of the Anti-Poverty Centre Committee, and look, it's a privilege to be a member. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning, Priya.
How's it going?
It's going very cold. I'm sure that folks down in Nam are feeling quite similarly. But yes, I'm struggling after having come back from Meganjin, where it was slightly less cold, slightly more tolerable.
Yeah, and I believe that the front that's hitting us is going to be hitting you in a couple of days as well. Yeah. So my advance condolences. Now, can you give us a bit of a background to the People Against Poverty Summit? Why did you collectively, the organisations that we mentioned, decide to put this event on?
A couple of years ago, the Anti-Poverty Network South Australia actually organised a conference, and some of us from other parts of the country were able to go down and attend. So Anti-Poverty Network Queensland folks, a couple of us from the Anti-Poverty Centre and the Unemployed Workers Union were there, and we had a... kind of got a get together after that conference where we sort of thought this was such a an important kind of opportunity for us all to connect, and we felt that it was necessary to kind of create more spaces in a more intentional way and to do things in a more collaborative way. So at that time, Anti-Poverty Network Queensland was like, we might host the next one. And from there, we've sort of started doing more coordinated work over the last couple of years and culminating in the weekend's conference up in Meganjin.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks like it was an incredible program of events. I understand, you know, the first day was mainly speakers and panels, but you also had a lot of workshops. So I'm keen to hear about the capacity building and skill sharing aspect of the summit, because this is by and for folks that are living below the poverty line, that are fighting against, you know, the poverty crisis in so-called Australia. So can you talk about what went on at the anti-poverty organizing breakouts?
Yes. And so obviously we, you know, wanted to get people together to meet each other and to strengthen, I guess, the sense of solidarity across the country among different folks in poverty who are involved in trying to, whether it's shift narratives, whether it is practically feed each other in communities and to learn from each other. And so while we, you know, the first day kind of discussing some of the issues that we're dealing with and equipping each other, I suppose, with more in-depth understanding of specific things we're working on, specific issues we're facing, that enabled us to kind of lay a foundation for the second day where we focused on some practical actions that we can take. So the Anti-Poverty Network Queensland and Community Union Defence League organised a workshop on how you do a mutual aid kitchen, which is something they do frequently, feeding folks in Musgrave Park, which is a site of Aboriginal resistance, which we got to learn and hear a lot about from Bo Spearham on Saturday evening. We also had, speaking of mutual aid, right, everything's so connected throughout this weekend. We had Food Not Bombed feeding folks on Saturday night, demonstrating, putting into practice, you know, getting together and feeding communities. We also heard from Jay Coonan and Jess Harrison, Jay at the Anti-Poverty Centre and Jess at the Unemployed Workers Union, and Sean Bickley from Our Fair Go about practical advocacy, how you assist people who are exposed to harm or having difficulty navigating things like Centrelink, the NDIS, and the compulsory activities called mutual obligations that some Centrelink recipients have to do. There was a really important session from Uncle Wayne Coco Wharton and Uncle Jubaloo about, I guess, challenging allies to do more in terms of our solidarity with First Nations people and understanding the distinctions between the more radical calls for, you know, decentralised self-determination and land back compared to some of the things that people see in more mainstream spaces. There is vicarious trauma training, media training with the Economic Media Centre, and community mapping. So I'm actually not going to cover everything, but I'll just leave it there for now because I feel like I'm rambling on. But there was a lot. Needless to say, there was a lot.
Well, I mean, you know, just the sort of sampler that you've given us there shows the... It shows this is going to sound extremely silly, but bear with me. But it does show the breadth of the like vision for organizing against enforced poverty and deprivation in so-called Australia in the way that that intersects with so many other different struggles, right? Like, you know, there's the mutual aid component that, you know, necessarily occurs to keep people afloat throughout the poverty crisis. But there's also the all of this work that's going into building a world otherwise, into organizing for change to reduce the pressures on people's lives now. So I can, you know, I can understand that you're finding it difficult to summarize everything. And now that we are, you know, a few days out from the chaos, can you share maybe some reflections on how you think it went and on the importance, especially of creating accessible spaces for organizing against enforced deprivation for folks living below the poverty line?
I think it's been really wonderful to hear. Like, probably sounds kind of obvious, but poor people don't have the resources to get together and meet each other outside of their own physical locations very often. And to my knowledge, this is kind of the largest group that have been able to come together from different parts of the country, certainly while I've been involved in this sort of activism. And the thing that I heard frequently from people who are poor who were at the conference was how valuable it was not just to meet each other, but to be able to recognize each other's expertise. Because at the Anti-Poverty Center, you know, we say that experts in poverty are people who live it. And I think it's people can understand that at one level, but really, to quote Mel Fisher, who is another Anti-Poverty Center member, when I asked her about this, she said that those in poverty are the experts, and you could see that expertise. And it really, you know, changed or shows when we often get treated like we don't know how to fix things. It's very clear that we do when you get everyone together in that way. And I really felt that people who I know a lot got to see each other demonstrating how much capacity we all have, both to articulate the challenges that we're facing, to imagine what we could move towards, what we should move towards, and have ideas about what we need in order to do that. So it was, it was a pretty incredible thing. I really also appreciated we were extremely privileged to have folks like Uncle Stephen, Uncle Coco, Uncle Jubaloo, and Auntie Barbara Pershaw sharing so much deep knowledge with us. And I hope and I think that a lot of folks who have not had much opportunity to hear from staunch elders were able to learn an awful lot about First Nations, meaningful First Nations justice, and how deeply that links to the injustices that welfare recipients are experiencing. So, yes, it's, again, very hard to encapsulate it, but there was, you know, some really practical outcomes too, actually, already. I will say we had a councillor attending who is going back to council meetings to figure out how to make sure that, you know, $500,000 in funding for food banks becomes required for food banks to provide food for free instead of charging poor people money for aid. And we had someone from a social services organisation starting to question whether and how and why they should actually be endorsing some of the food banks asking for more resources instead of increasing people's Centrelink payments. So, yes, again, lots there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I am excited to start unpacking those, you know, different things that have come up because people were able to get together like this, because of the conversations that people were able to participate on across, you know, the rest of the year and going forward, because I can imagine that this will have ripple effects for a long, long time. Now, just to wrap up, we haven't had the opportunity to catch up with you since this year's federal election. So I was hoping that you could maybe share some thoughts on the cabinet reshuffle that's put Tanya Plibersek in charge of social services and former social services minister Amanda Rishworth at the head of employment and workplace relations, which of course has a bearing on Centrelink recipients because that is linked to mutual obligations. So have you seen any significant shifts in, you know, decision-making there, and what should we be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, I think it was pretty disappointing to see Amanda Rishworth put in this job when she just spent 3 years doing nothing for welfare recipients in as the social services minister, and in fact, not just doing nothing, but actively, I think, getting in the way of even meagre progress that the government was willing to go forward with in response to the Robodebt Royal Commission. You know, really simple things like limiting the length of time that a debt can be raised. So to see her in this role now was very disheartening, quite distressing, particularly in the context of this unfolding legal crisis that the government is in. At the moment, the foundations of the system of so-called mutual obligations has been put into question. The Employment Department has realised they've been unlawfully administering large parts of the system, but they are persisting at the moment with suspending people's payments, even though for many years we have provided copious amounts of evidence that those payment suspensions are happening unlawfully. So we were hopeful that after the election the government would move quickly to stop those payment suspensions. We have seen no movement on that yet. We have seen no appetite on that yet. And we are still hearing that, unfortunately, we can't actually lawfully administer that part of the system, because if we turn off this mechanism of compulsion, that these private providers who just rake in billions of dollars from our poverty would not be financially viable. So it's not a good outlook in terms of the new ministers. We haven't yet heard anything back from Minister Plibersek's office in terms of the social services portfolio. But in terms of where we're at, there is, I suppose, opportunity that hasn't existed before to really shake, shake the foundations of this system and potentially dismantle it. So we're looking forward to hearing from the Commonwealth Ombudsman in the next few weeks, who has been doing an investigation into this unlawful administration and has already expanded his investigation, which initially was just looking at the Employment Department and their own, decision making, and will now expand to their oversight of these, there's unemployment providers, or the unemployment cops, as we call them. There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on.
The ministers themselves are, a bit miserable.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like, unfortunately, we haven't solved everything with the election of a Labor supermajority. Surprise, surprise. So we look forward to having you, and also folks from, all of the organizations that you were involved in organizing the Anti-Poverty or People Against Poverty Summit with, on to just keep, keep poking at this issue and keep raising the voices of folks that are living below the poverty line, and, demanding real tangible change that stops enforcing poverty and deprivation. So thank you very much, Kristen.
Thanks so much, Priya. And I'll just add, we were so grateful to Anna Carlson and Nat Osborne, who organised volunteers from 4ZZZ and the Brisbane Free University to record and do Zoom making of all of the sessions on Saturday. So we're hoping to make those available for folks in the coming weeks.
Oh, incredible. I love Anna and Nat. This is a great opportunity to shout out Radio Reversal on 4ZZZ as well. Yeah. Go listen to some of our sister community radio stations. But thanks so much, Kristen.
Thanks, Priya.
And that was Kristen O'Connell from Anti-Poverty Centre, who was catching us up on last weekend's People Against Poverty Summit in Meganjin, or Brisbane, and that brought together people, movements and communities to learn skills, share ideas, build relationships and form networks of solidarity, and imagine an alternative to the poverty crisis in so-called Australia. Now, another reminder and disclosure that I am a member of the Anti-Poverty Centre Committee. You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it is 7:58 in the morning. 3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au. You are listening to Thursday Breakfast. Just another reminder that Radiothon is going for the entirety of June. Get your donations in before the end of financial year. You can head to 3cr.org.au/donate. We are trying to raise $275,000 to keep the station going for another year. Independent, community-driven, grassroots-connected, 3CR, your station, your voice. And now we are joined by Robbie Thorpe, Jurin Bunjalini, Robbie Thorpe, and Nat Kaleha from Elbit Out of Victoria as part of our special 3CR coverage of Elbit Out of Victoria's week-long end of financial year campaign to cut all economic ties to genocide. So they are joining us to speak about the importance of organizing to bring about an end to genocide on these stolen lands and in Palestine. And they're going to be talking about Elbit Out of Victoria's upcoming rally to demand that so-called Australia's Future Fund divests from weapons companies complicit in genocide, including Elbit Systems. Now, this rally, No to a Future Soaked in Blood, begins at 5 p.m. today, Thursday the 26th of June, at the Future Fund head office on 447 Collins Street in the CBD. Now, good morning, Robbie and Nat.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you very much for making the time today. Now, Robbie, I wanted to begin by asking you if you'd just like to share any updates from Camp Sovereignty and how things have been going there.
Camp Sovereign is going really well, actually. We're still there after 15 months, this latest Camp Sovereignty episode. But more importantly, crimescenestralia.com is going very well as well. That's the platform that I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think... you know, the work that you've been doing and uplifting at Camp Sovereignty around Crime Scene Australia and the, you know, this ongoing genocide in Gaza by Israel of the Palestinian people are intimately connected. And, you know, I think if people can't recognize that now, they just have been choosing not to pay attention. So I guess, Nat, I wanted to go to you and ask about the Future Fund campaign. What is the so-called Australian States Future Fund investment portfolio looking like, and why is it so concerning in relation to the genocide of the Palestinians?
Yeah, I guess, like, we see this as an essential, you know, crime in this context, because the wealth fund actually use public wealth to invest in a variety of different companies to accumulate wealth. But that wealth only exists because of all of the extraction that's happened from stolen land here, the ongoing genocide of First Nations people on this continent. And I think that that's a really important starting point for our campaign, that, you know, it is anti-colonial, anti-imperial, anti-capitalist. And that's something that has kind of our whole campaign has been grounded in. And so we... when we encountered these kinds of investments that Future Fund, like, were set up and to make to produce this kind of wealth for future generations, we're really seeing this as part of an extension of the colonial project in this context and how it uses wealth that was produced from the genocide of First Nations people here and from, like, extracting land here. And so their mandate is to produce a really high return every year. And that mandate was given by the Commonwealth. And so they have to produce, I think it's between 4.5% to 5% every year. And they invest in a variety of capitalist, you know, financial markets to produce that kind of wealth. And, of course, because it's such a big amount that they have to produce every year, they're producing in these really awful companies. And one of those companies is Elbit Systems. And for those that don't yet know, Elbit Systems is one of the main companies that's I guess, supplying the weapons that Israel is using in its current genocide of Palestinian people, but also using those weapons across the world in various ways as well. And so, yeah, we have seen that since October 2023, the share price, the shareholding value that Future Fund has in Elbit Systems has increased by approximately 450%. And so we see that that increase is directly tied to the profits that the company is making from genocide, which is disgusting.
Yeah, it's absolutely appalling to see that this illegal occupation that we're in now is looking to, the actions of genocide that weapons manufacturing companies are profiting off of and seeing that as a lucrative opportunity to generate wealth. And I guess, Robbie, I wanted to hear maybe some of your thoughts about that, about those relationships between Australia and Israel and some of your concerns.
They're basically the same. There's the illegal occupation and there's genocide oppression going on. In Australia, it's been going on for 250 years, unaddressed. But this country's obviously unwilling, incapable and unable to deal with the issues. We established Camp Sovereignty, a group called the Black GST, meaning genocide, sovereignty, lack of treaty. That were the fundamental legal issues that underpinned this country. So that's why Camp Sovereignty was built back in 2006 during the Commonwealth Games. So, you know, it's really hypocritical for me to hear Australia talk about the issues elsewhere in this country. When, you know, Australia is basically a neo-colonised that built, you know, the basis of its country on a preemptive strike with weapons of mass destruction, undeclared war, secret invasion. It's an illegal occupation. There's no such thing as sovereign wealth for non-Aboriginal people. It's stolen wealth. Every red cent from the get-go, and everyone's involved. This country's in a deep state of denial. It's chronically racist. Its institutions, the judiciary, the education system and the governments. It's just chronically bad here. And it enables emboldened places like Israel. I wonder what it would be like, where Israel would be without the support of Britain, Australia, and the United States, you know, the AUKUS pact, basically. Where would they be without that support? It's all stolen wealth and it's supporting genocide elsewhere around the globe. They're complicit obviously complicit in the genocide that's going on in Palestine. So clear. It really disturbs me about the hypocrisy in this country. You know, and they're my concerns. The lack of education here about these issues and their role in it all. You know, Australia's been involved with the crimes in Palestine since 1948. Mm. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you think about the countries that you've named, and we're talking about, you know, the former sort of imperial heartland, but then also other settler colonial occupations, because, you know, Canada and the United States have been supportive of Israel in its genocidal campaign, as has Australia. And you can see these sorts of allegiances and ongoing ties as these states prop each other up in their, you know, perpetration of atrocities. Now, Nat, I also wanted to ask about how the Future Fund campaign, I guess, sits within the broader Elbit Out of Victoria campaign, because we've been talking with various members of the Elbit Out of Victoria campaign on 3CR across this week about some of the actions that you're engaged with. But I was wondering if you could maybe give us a bit more of that context.
Yeah, so I just wanted to touch on something Uncle Robbie said, because, you know, even just the word sovereign wealth is just so ridiculous that they use that word. It's how they justify making all of these awful decisions, and it is stolen wealth. And that's a word that we just keep encountering through Future Fund, and we're just like, it's just so absolutely ridiculous how they keep using this language to like conceal their own violences, let alone the violences that they're enabling everywhere else. In terms of Elbit systems, I guess our campaign is, a single focus that, you know, we're kind of responding to the calls from Palestinian people in regards to BDS. And Elbit Systems is one of those companies that the Palestinian people have called on workers across the world to challenge and to divest from and to stop the manufacturing of weapons. So that's why that's the specific focus that we have in terms of the investments that are being made in that company. Also acknowledging that there is like probably more bad investments than good investments that the fund is making as well. But yeah, that's kind of what we're responding to as part of this focused campaign. And there's been successes across the globe in terms of divestment and, I guess the stopping those kinds of contracts being forged with a company that's just committing like such atrocities across the world. And developing, like being enabled to develop this kind of technology and do research to continue to develop technology that's doing things that are, I guess, beyond our imagination. You know, they're just, it's so dark what this company is kind of producing and able to do as a result of all of the money that it's getting from all of the illegal occupations and imperialist agenda across the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, not to mention the fact that weapons companies like Elbit Systems use Palestine as a place to demonstrate the efficacy of the violent and destructive weapons that they have created, which is just horrifying and perverse. And so I can understand the significance of this call to end those ties. And Nat, where can people find out more about and support the Elbit Out of Victoria campaign? And can you tell us what's on for tonight?
Yeah, so you can head to either the FreePalestineCoalition.num Instagram, or you can also go to FreePalestineCoalition.com, the website, and that lists all the information there as well. We encourage everybody to attend the rally tonight. We've got Uncle Robbie as one of our speakers. And it's at 447 Collins Street in the CBD. And it starts from 5 p.m. So if people can't make it exactly at 5, that's fine. Like, just get there whenever you can. We're kicking off our campaign in terms of demanding divestment. And we'd love to see everybody there because this is something that everybody is implicated in. And this is, like, everybody should be showing up to these things and be demanding that we look at the way that we're using this kind of wealth. Like, we need to be focusing on, land back, reparations, treaty, First Nations justice, first and foremost. We need to be focusing on, like, equitable education, equitable healthcare. Like, there are so many things that we need to be focusing on, and yet, you know, it's not surprising that this is where the money is being funneled. But it doesn't mean, because it's not surprising, that, you know, we just accept that. And so I encourage everyone to get on the street tonight and to be there in solidarity as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Robbie, is there anything you wanted to leave us with before we wrap up for today?
I just say that here in Melbourne, there's many armed manufacturers and traders. Now, just where I am here in Richmond, it's close to BAE. I think that means British Arms Export. Honeywell, I'm not too sure exactly what they do. Raytheon, they're all within a stone's throw of me here in Richmond. I just wonder how many others there are, like Elbit. So, you know, just to give you an idea what this country's really like. There's no treaty there, no consent. There's no jurisdiction to apply to our people. And, the genocide continues. So if you want to do something about genocide, you should clean up our own backyards. And that goes right across this globe. And that's one way of stopping it happening globally.
Yeah, absolutely. And really appreciate all of the work that you've been doing for so long to keep making those connections and educating people about this and galvanizing people to action. So thank you both so much.
Can I just say that people can go to my website called crimescenestay.com. Crime Scene Australia is one word. And it lists the cases that we've currently got going in regards to the crime of genocide in this country.
Yeah, we will definitely put that in our show notes. Thank you both so much again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was Jiren Bunjalini, Robbie Thorpe and Nat Kaleha from Elbit Out of Victoria, who joined us to speak about the importance of organising to bring about an end to genocide on these stolen lands and in Palestine. And again, the rally No to a Future Soaked in Blood is going to begin at 5 p.m. today, Thursday, the 26th of June, at the Future Fund head office on 447 Collins Street in the CBD.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars Prison Broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2025. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 a.m., from Monday the 7th through to Friday the 11th of July. We'll be taking you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Philip Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Middleton Prison, Marguerite Correctional Centre and Port Phillip Prison. We'll be connecting with culture and community. There'll be stories, songs, opinions and poems from the men and women inside. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR digital and streaming via our website or on the Community Radio Plus app. Head to the website 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2025 for more information.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM and it is just about to hit 8:15 in the morning. This is Thursday Breakfast and we started off this morning with an interview from Dr. Alison Bronowski, who is a former diplomat and academic who's written 14 books about Australia's international role and relationships in the world. And Dr. Alison joined us to discuss IPAN, or the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network's calls on the Australian government to not participate in the bombing or support of the US bombing, illegal bombing in Iran by the United States last week. And after that, we heard from Kristen O'Connell from Anti-Poverty Centre, who spoke to us about last weekend's People Against Poverty Summit in the Mugajin, Brisbane area, which brought people together, movements and communities to learn skills, share ideas and relationships and form networks of solidarity. After that, and our last interview, we heard from Uncle Robbie Thorpe and Nat. And this was part of 3CR's special coverage of Albert out of Victoria's week-long end of financial year campaign to cut all economic ties to genocide. And there will be a rally happening this afternoon, No to a Future Soaked in Blood. And it begins at 5 p.m. and it at the Future Fund head office at 447 Collins Street in the CBD. And next up, we're going to hear from Economic Media Centre Xinghua Quan speaking to Priya, and we'll be back with that interview after this announcement.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Have you heard of long COVID? If you or someone you know have had COVID-19, you may still experience symptoms weeks or months later. There are many symptoms of long COVID, but the most frequent are extreme tiredness, shortness of breath, and muscle aches and joint pains. Anyone can experience long COVID, including children. You can find information in your language on the Health Translations website, healthtranslations.vic.gov.au. Just type long COVID as a keyword.
A 3CR supporter.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenants.vic.org.au, Anika Legal at www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. the Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and we are now joined by Jinghua Chen, Senior Media Advisor at Economic Media Centre and member of MEAA for Palestine. And Jinghua is speaking with us about Antoinette Latouf's victory yesterday in her wrongful termination case against the ABC. And the public broadcaster fired Latouf on the 20th of December 2023 after receiving complaints that she had shared facts about Israel's genocidal campaign against Palestinians in Gaza on social media. Good morning, Jinghua.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. Now, I want to maybe begin by asking about what happened in Antoinette Latouf's case. So can you please just give us a bit of a recap of how that all went down?
Sure. So she was in a backfill position, in an infill position just before Christmas in December 2023 as a presenter on ABC Radio in Sydney for 5 days. And I think there had already been some complaints from the pro-Israel lobby about her having that role very early on, and I think really some, I would say, like bullying remove her from that role. Mm-hmm. She posted a story to Instagram that was a just sharing a Human Rights Watch story about starvation as a tactic, starvation as a war crime, a couple of days into that 5-day contract, and then she was removed. She was not allowed to continue to present for the remaining days of that 5-day contract. So that was in December 2023, more than a year and a half ago. And then yesterday, finally, after a very long legal process, Justice Daryl Rangier in the federal court judged that it was that the ABC had contravened the Fair Work Act in terminating an employee, in terminating Antoinette Latouf for her political opinion.
Yeah, and can you share any of the key takeaways from Justice Rangier's ruling?
Yeah, I think some of the parts that really stood out to me is that Justice Rangier said that it was clear that the complaints against Latouf were an orchestrated campaign by the pro-Israel lobby, and that the decision to terminate was made to appease the pro-Israel lobby, who would inevitably escalate their complaints. And I think that acknowledgement that this was a targeted campaign against Antoinette Latouf that the ABC was responding to, not just complaints from the supposed complaints from the public that were sent by email, but also the threat of coverage in The Australian was one thing that was acknowledged. And I think that's really important because we're seeing that happen in a lot of different public institutions across Australia in media and culture. And I think that the sort of detail in the judgment of the internal conversations at the ABC and that fear of negative coverage from The Australian and other parts of the press was a really motivating factor in this termination, and that's really concerning. But I think it's good to have that acknowledged in a legal judgment for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, given the magnitude, I guess, of that decision, what implications might it have for other workplace disputes and job terminations that have been justified on the basis of employees' decision to speak up on Palestine?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can't say what it means legally. That's not my area of expertise at all. But I think it definitely, I think this case is really closely watched by a lot of people. You know, it's received huge amount of media coverage over the full year and a half, and I think it has I think it means a lot for Palestine, for workers' rights, for journalism and editorial independence, and also for how we hold public institutions like the ABC to account for their decisions and their workplace practices. So in terms of speaking out about Palestine and human rights violations and war crimes, I think the reality of, you know, the fact that the post that Antoinette Latouf had made was a Human Rights Watch story that the ABC had covered itself as a news report. I think that's really important that you know, that has been acknowledged over and over, you know, is a legitimate thing to do, to share news for a presenter, a broadcaster, a journalist to share news, you know, is a reasonable thing to do, but also that workers should be allowed to express political opinion, to both hold and express political opinion, was another thing that Justice Rangia mentioned a few times in the judgment yesterday, that is a protected right. And I think that's really important for workers' rights, you know, in any sector, but especially in media and arts and culture, where I think, you know, workers are very visible, are public-facing, and are often held to, I think, you know, more scrutiny than you might be in jobs where you are seen as more a private citizen. But also I think, especially because this was a short, you know, a 5-day contract, I think it's really important for contractors and freelancers and people working in sort of less ongoing employment situations, because I think we've seen in a lot of the terminations and cancellations and sort of punitive action taken against workers for speaking up that often these are workers who, you know, have less protection than workers in ongoing full-time positions, and it makes it really hard to know what your rights are, and to then stand up for your rights when you're in these, in short-term contracts that sort of, you know, if you read most arts contracts, like all of the power is at the institution side.
Absolutely.
There's a false pretense of sole traders, I think, being a, you know, like as if it's a business-to-business negotiation, when clearly it's all of the terms and conditions and the framework of employment is really, is really on the company or institution side. So I think, that's important as well. And then in terms of journalism, you know, I think that's really crucial that we're seeing, you know, lobbying and political interference exposed, and the way that has interfered in the editorial independence and ethical standards of an institution like the ABC that is so vital for providing journalism and access to news to everyone free of cost. So I think that's been really startling to me to see the extent of silencing on Palestine in journalism.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real contrast in what's in the way that discourse and reporting on Palestine is viewed. Even the fact that you know, I think so many executives at the ABC clearly just saw this as controversial, and not just at the ABC, but at many media.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, thinking about the way as well that private media institutions are able to then exercise this, you know, leverage over the public broadcaster is incredibly concerning and something that I'd love to talk to you about in future. But Jinghua, that's all the time we've got for today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks so much, Priya.
Now, that was Jinghua Chen from the Economic Media Center and a member of MEAA for Palestine. And Jinghua spoke with us about Antoinette Latouf's victory yesterday in her wrongful termination case against the ABC. And earlier on in the show, we heard from Dr. Alison Broinowski from IPAN. We caught up with Kristen O'Connell from Anti-Poverty Center. And we also heard from Jaron Bungellini, Robbie Thorpe, and Nat Kaleha from Elbit out of Victoria, who spoke with us about the campaign to get Elbit out of Victoria and reminded us about the rally that's happening at 5 p.m. today, Thursday the 26th of June, at the Future Fund head office on 447 Collins Street in the CBD. That is all we have time for today on Thursday Morning Breakfast, but thank you so much for joining us. Remember to get those donations in before the end of June, 3cr.org.au.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical independent bookseller and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs in the basement of Trades Hall in Victoria Street, Carlton, or check them out at nibs.org.au to find more information about upcoming discussions and events.